You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic. Do you enjoy the Stable Management Podcast? Want to learn even more about horse healthcare? Get your management and industry questions answered at Ask the Horse Live, a free audio event available exclusively from thehorse.com. Each Ask the Horse Live episode focuses on a specific equine healthcare topic chosen by our editors. We gather leading veterinarians, researchers, and industry experts to tackle your toughest questions. You can also hear on-demand episodes of Ask the Horse on thehorse.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Haley Kerstetter, and my guest today is Dr. Steve Adair from the University of Tennessee. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Adair.
Well, thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
I'm excited about our topic today because I'm sure barn managers have to deal with it at one point or another, unfortunately, and that is rehabilitating horses with soft tissue or bone injuries. So could you just start off by telling us a little bit about the common injuries or conditions that you see which would require rehab in performance horses?
There are certainly numerous conditions, but probably the most common, the two most common, at least, that we deal with here at the University of Tennessee is going to be tendon or ligament injuries. Most commonly, you know, the superficial flexor tendon, deep digital flexor tendon, in the distal limb. After that, the next is going to be what we have termed here, at UT is top line dysfunction. And it's basically those horses that have a poor top line, their back's not developed. They've got lack of gluteal development, maybe even have some back pain associated with it. And so those are probably going to be the two most common situations or conditions that we deal with. Now, we certainly deal with a lot of other conditions, you know, post-surgical conditions, post-colic surgeries, post-arthroscopic surgeries, wounds. We deal with wound healing. So those are going to be most of the conditions, at least, that we deal with here. And certainly at the farm, probably looking at more of the tendon ligament type of injuries and or the lack of condition and lack of top line development would be what people would be encountering most of.
Definitely. So when you're thinking about starting to create a rehab plan, what are the key components that would make this plan effective and who should be involved in creating it?
I do think it is. I think we need to recognize that it is a team situation. Okay. And there may be numerous individuals that are involved in the healthcare. Certainly a lot of allied professionals, et cetera. So the first and foremost, we certainly need to be aware of the horse's health. And so certainly having a veterinarian kind of actually being the team leader to determine the degree of injury, how severe it is, those type of situation is going to be very important. From there, then you're certainly going to have those individuals that are actually going to be doing the therapies. And so certainly barn personnel, barn managers, veterinary technicians, veterinary assistants, those would be individuals that would be involved with not necessarily developing a plan, but instituting the plan. A properly trained physical therapist would be certainly a person that would be involved. And so primarily, a lot of it would deal with the veterinarian and plus or minus physical therapist. There are some veterinarians that are quite adept at rehab. And so you may have the veterinarian actually developing the plan, and then you would have other individuals that would be monitoring and providing care. And then you've got allied professionals. I mean, you can certainly have the massage therapist involved. You can certainly have the chiropractor involved. You can have the acupuncturist involved. So all of it depends on the individual. And I think it's very important to recognize that there's not a one plan fits all. And not every, just because you have a therapy in your toolbox doesn't necessarily mean it is appropriate for an individual. And so having that team that can look after that horse, and frequently reevaluate it. I mean, because this is not something that you start and then a month or two later you come back and make a decision. This can be daily and or weekly that you need to be adjusting your plan. And certainly that's what we do here at UT. All of our cases are evaluated on a daily basis. They get an in-depth evaluation weekly, and then we adjust on the fly. I mean, it just something may not be working, and we'll change to something else. And so it's important for individuals to be all be on the same time, and the owners have got to be involved in it. They have got to be committed. And I often tell people that there has to be a meeting of the minds. If individuals are expecting a Grand Prix jumper and the rehab specialist is going to be happy if this horse is walking around the pasture, then there's got to be a meeting of the minds. We have to set realistic goals. We have to do objective outcome measures, and then we need to be willing to adjust our plan on the fly.
Yeah, I think you brought up something that I see as a common theme no matter what the topic is, and it's treating each horse as an individual. Whether we're talking about nutrition or farriery on this podcast, we always hear that, and it's always, adjust based on the individual.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, and I didn't even mention the farrier and the nutrition, et cetera. I mean, it's so important to have everybody as a team and develop it based on the individual. Again, as I said, you need to have a team leader. Okay, there's got to be a captain. The old adage, too many cooks spoil the soup, or there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians, type of analogy. It is important because you need to have one person that can look at it globally, and certainly make sure that whatever is being done is for the best of the individual.
So, speaking of the team, the owner is obviously a big part in this. So, how would you recommend managing and communication with the horse owner and managing their expectations during this process? Because I know that horse owners they can have varying levels of involvement in this.
I think it is reliant upon the individual, whomever's the team leader, to have the adequate knowledge, not only of the condition that's being rehabbed, but the horse itself. Okay. And we haven't talked about the mental status and mental, you don't get tunnel vision, look at just what you're rehabbing. You've got to take the total picture into account. So I think having a very frank, open discussion as to, what the particular injury is, and, taking into account what is this horse's mental status is. What I mean, if you're sitting here thinking that this horse is going to need to be on stall confinement for 90 days, and the horse is sorry for a term, but a blithering idiot, then, I mean, there's got to be adjustments, and people have to have a thorough and frank understanding of what is going on with that individual. And I mean, I sit down with people and I will actually go through the ultrasound. I'll show them pictures. You know, if I've done arthroscopy or tenoscopy on this, on a case, you know, I will sit down with the owners. I will show them what normal structures look like and what the injured structures look like. And, you know, just give them my professional opinion as to what I think the prognosis is. I've got one in the clinic right now that's got a pretty significant injury, and we had to have a frank discussion about what my professional opinion is as far as this horse's ability to come back and have an athletic future. It's, you know, and I think that and having the knowledge of the injury and having a frank discussion with the owner, with the trainer, et cetera, is very important.
So when you do have those horses, maybe at the early stages of rehab, who mm-hmm. would have to be on stall rest, do you mm-hmm. have any practical tips for the managers and owners who are dealing with these horses for both their mental and physical state?
Sure, sure. Well, I think we need to recognize, except in some special circumstances, you know, I look at what the horse is doing in the stall. If the horse is sitting, turning circles in the stall, then you have to look at the amount of exercise it is doing in the stall. Okay. So if it is walking around the stall comfortably, then I'll be honest with you, I don't have a problem with taking that horse out of the stall, walking it up and down the barn aisle several times a day. So basically what we do a lot of is just provide a mental stimulus instead of being cooped up in the stall. So if possible, I do try to get the horse out safely do some change of environment. Second thing, stall toys, you know, stall balls, milk jugs with rocks in it hanging from the ceiling. They can bounce around. There's balls that we put hay in and they can push the ball around in the stall and eat hay out of it. You know, those type of things. Some of them, getting them a buddy, Shetland pony, a goat, something like that, so they're not alone. And those individuals may stay in the stall with them. You know, it's really funny. I was at a steeplechase here a couple of weeks ago, and there's a horse, one of the race horses. They had a Shetland pony that stayed with it all the time, and so. You know, and it was hauled with her and everything. And so that's important. And then putting a radio in the stall. Here at UT, we've actually got a very unique thing is that we've got a lot. We've got actually two of them, life-size horses that are fiberglass, that are on wheels. We roll them all over the hospital. Because and we'll stick them in a stall across from an individual, and they think there's another horse there, and it's really kind of humorous because you know you think the horse it doesn't move. Why would another live horse think that it's a true horse? But they do, and so that's a situation. And then we certainly going on. There's certainly pharmacological interventions that can be done just to knock the edge off. There's some prescription medications out there that the veterinarian can prescribe. There's some feed additives out there, some casein derivatives or some CBD that can be tried to calm them down, taking the edge off of them. So there are pharmacological ways that we can do it. But for the most part, I try to do mental stimulation. We interact with these horses. The rehab patients we have here at UT, they're getting 3 to 4 hours a day of human interaction. So we do a lot of interactions from stall stretching, balance pads, grooming, taking them out, walking them, going out in the arena, going in the treadmill, you name it. But we're at interacting. And I think that mental stimulus can help a lot. It basically helps with boredom, and that's what leads to our bad stall behaviors is boredom. They're sitting in there, they don't have anything to do, they don't have any interaction, and they start acting up, weaving, circling, whatever the case may be. So that's just some thoughts.
I love the fiberglass horses.
Oh,
That's so
it's
cool.
great. It is. I'm serious. If you're having to do a rehab instead of having, other horses in the, near that horse, this having a life-size fiberglass horse that can be placed in different positions in different areas works great. We use it all the time. All the time. It really worked good.
That's awesome. So when you are maybe looking at starting to hand walk or turn out or ride a horse that's been on stall rest, how do you handle those patients that are not super compliant and might even become a little bit dangerous with those activities?
Well, again, I think it's going to be reliant upon probably the veterinarian to determine. Yes, we do sedate. I mean, there may be instances that sedation has to be instituted. What we usually do here, though, just we usually do a lot of control stuff before we put the rider on their back. So they would have been going in the underwater treadmill, or they have been going out in the arena, hand walking over poles, things like that. Then we progress them to lunging over poles. Then we progress them to ridden work. And so it is a gradual progression in their exercise regime, not only in time, but also in intensity. And what we have found is by the time we get to the stage that they're ready to be tack walked, we've been taking them out every day for 6 weeks. And so they're not as prone to explosive behavior. Now, I'll be the first one to admit there's individuals, babies, youngsters, 2 year olds, that the bottom line is they're gonna be excitable regardless. And in those situations, yes, we do certainly have to use some pharmacological intervention. The other thing that helps, and this is just dealing with turnout. Let's say you've had one that's been in the stall and now you're ready to put it out into a small paddock. Well, you can actually skip the morning feeding and feed the horse once you put them out into the round pen or the paddock. And a lot of times they're going to be more interested in eating initially because that's where you really worry about the explosive behavior is when you walk them to that paddock or round pen and you unsnap the lead rope and they just take off. Well, if you've got their food sitting there right after they go into the paddock, they're going to be more inclined to eat. And once they're done eating, they'll look around and say, oh, this is something new. And they'll tend just to walk around. Now they'll probably at some point in time buck or canter around, but it's really that feeding them when they first go out there can help with the initial burst of explosive activity. And so, we certainly use that also as a means. The other thing is, as bad as it sounds, is sometimes, hopefully the injury has reached a point to where it can withstand stresses. And sometimes you just have to kind of close your eyes, and turn away and hope. It's again, I think the most important thing is the graduated exercise to where by the time you are ready for turnout and or you're ready for tack walking or tack exercises, that horse has already kind of been acclimated to an increasing exercise regime, and that helps a lot.
Definitely. Yeah. I like the creative ideas with like the feed for turnout. I mean, just that seems so simple to implement,
Oh,
but it would
it is.
probably make a big difference.
Yeah, it can. I'm gonna be a realist here. Yes, there are sometimes where we have to give them some sedation, just enough to kind of knock the edge off so that they don't have, and that's what you're worried about. You're worried about the explosive behavior. You're not necessarily worried about, trotting around or even cantering or loping around. That's usually not it's that explosive that puts excessive stress on the injured tissue. And so that's what you're trying to avoid, is that explosive type of situation.
So I know that at UT you guys have quite a bit of rehab equipment. So can you tell us a little bit about what tools you like to use, such as like the underwater treadmill or vibration plates or
Sure.
laser, and when you might use those?
Yeah, we pretty much have every tool in the books, to be honest with you. Do we use them all? We don't. And what I want to challenge people is that, and especially those of you that have been to human physical therapy. I've had shoulder surgery, I've had knee surgery, I have been to human PT. What the primary things that they utilize is going to be therapeutic exercise. And I really would like to see people get away from, just using every modality in the book. Because a lot of times it's not necessarily indicated. Okay, so in our books here, what we do is the first thing we do in our rehab plan is address pain. Okay, the next thing that we do is to address mobility. And then lastly, the third thing is strengthening. So that's our plan. So when we talk about controlling pain, cold cryotherapy is going to be important. Therapeutic laser is going to be important. Okay. And so those are going to be things that we will utilize to control pain. After that, when we start talking about mobility, now we're starting to get into specific exercises, balance pads, passive stretching, carrot stretching, therapeutic ex the underwater treadmill, walking over poles. Those are going to be things that we start to utilize to improve mobility. Now, during that period of time, if we see that maybe that tendon that we've been rehabbing is getting a little hot, maybe a little painful, we'll back down on our therapeutic exercise and we'll do some cryotherapy on it, cold therapy on it, or laser. As we progress into the healing stages, and now we're going from we're in that mobility stage to a strengthening stage. Then we'll start adding stuff like therapeutic ultrasound, radio frequency therapy, those type of therapies that will help reorganize the tissues and certainly bring in and stimulate some cells and stuff to come into the area for healing. We do use shockwave therapy, so it depends on what the condition is. We do use pulse electromagnetic therapy pretty much only for bone. Really, if you look at the research out there, it's most efficacious for bone healing. And as far as like shockwave, we do use it for scar tissue remodeling. Ultrasound, we use it for scar tissue remodeling. And the thing about therapeutic ultrasound is that it can actually heat up and increase the temperature of tendons and ligaments. So if I've got a ligament injury, I'll do therapeutic ultrasound on them prior to doing exercises because what it does is it makes that tissue more pliable. And so it makes your exercises more effective. So timing is important. The vibration plates, really, if you look at vibration plates, primarily where I've been most impressed with it is actually for hoof growth. And I think we've noticed an acceleration in the rate of hoof growth on those horses that have gone on it. But it's important to realize that for it to be effective, you've got to do it every single day. And you're not looking at just a week or 2 weeks. You're looking at every single day for several weeks to a few months before you absolutely actually notice a benefit in hoof growth. It does have a little bit of a calming effect type of situation. So yeah, if I've got a horse that I want to break up its routine, certainly standing it on a vibration plate. The biggest issue is they've got to stand on it for 15 to 20 minutes minimum before you start to notice a clinical effect. So again, you got a little bit of compliance issue with the individual. And you certainly don't want to sedate them just to stand on a vibration plate. So, but again, I do think it's important that people recognize that all these modalities are really probably in the individual. You don't have to use everything. In fact, sometimes it's more contraindicated. So exercise is going to be one of the major components. Exercise and manual therapy, the passive stretching and flexing those limbs, weight shifting exercises, balance pads, those type of things that you can, some of that you can do in a stall before they can even be taken out and going the underwater treadmill, et cetera. We do use the underwater treadmill a lot here. I love it. And so it's a very good resistive type of exercise that does decrease weight bearing. And it's a big workout. So, you know, with our horses in here, you know, most commonly they're gonna first thing in the morning while they're eating, they're gonna get their carriage stretches, they're gonna get their butt tucks, they're gonna get their sternal lifts. Then they're probably gonna go in the underwater treadmill for 30 to 45 minutes. Then they're gonna get lunch, probably maybe do some balance pads. Then they'll go out into the arena for hand work for another 30, 45 minutes type of situation. And then in the evening, if they can, they will go on the free walker, the resistance free walker, for another 30 to 45 minutes. So a lot of our patients here are getting 3 to 4 hours of rehab a day interaction. So that's one thing I do try to impress upon people is rehab's not easy. It's work. And so it's not just simply running over and throwing on a pulsed electromagnetic unit and then turning away and moving, going on to the next patient or doing a laser therapy. Rehab is actually, if you really look at it from a total body, it's a lot of work.
So we're already coming to the end of our time today. It's really flown by. So I have one more question for you, and that is, what is one common misconception that you hear about rehabbing horses with injuries?
As I just said, a lot of people will think of it that the common misconceptions is I've got to do everything in the book that I've got in my facility. You know, I've spent money on a laser, I've spent money on a shock wave, I've spent money on a pulse electromagnetic unit. So every single patient has to have it. And that's a total misconception there. The other misconception is people tend to be more modality driven, and modalities are going to be the ultrasounds, the pulse electromagnetic, lasers, et cetera. And they don't do the exercise. Exercise and mobility are going to be the mainstays of a rehab plan. The second thing is relying, the other misconception is relying on anecdotal or testimonials as far as how this particular intervention works or how good it does. You really, people need to look at the scientific evidence because there's a lot of things that are out there that are not proven to be beneficial. We think they work, but they don't have the evidence to support them. And that's what you really need. People need to be more critical as far as what they're selecting to use. They need to look for those modalities or interventions that have some scientific backing and not just what comes from the manufacturer.
Thank you so much for talking with me today, Dr. Adair.
Sure.
This has been awesome.
Great. Well, thank you for having me. Certainly have enjoyed it.
Thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.